This is not just another golf podcast. This is Golf Underground. This is Golf Underground. We just happen to be the third funniest podcast in golf. We interview PGA Tour pros, Hall of Fame athletes, rock stars, business leaders. Sure, we talk about golf, but we have fun. All right, let's do it.
Welcome to Golf Underground. Now your hosts, Wardo, Sully, and MLB Hall of Famer, George Brett.
Thanks for joining the Golf Underground. Now, the Golf Underground is brought to you by Star Companies, KC. Experience a more energy efficient and comfortable home with Star's insulation services. Regain functional medicine. Feel better, function better, move better, and look better. Regal Distributing, specializing in the distribution of food service and professional cleaning supplies to a variety of industries. Cowell Insurance, providing brokerage and risk management services for over 25 years. Sono Orthopedics, care plans backed by research and clinical results tailored perfectly to individual needs. Bobsite Ford and Bobsite Independence Kia, where you'll score a double eagle on your next car or truck. Sheridan's Unforked, eating good and feeling good. Lewisburg Ford, nobody sells more F-150s than Lewisburg Ford. And Celebrity Greens, put a custom PGA caliber putting green in your backyard for the ultimate golf experience. Now, onto the program.
All right, welcome to Golf Underground, back in the stable. We just had a nice Masters preview show. George is back from Scottsdale. The sun hasn't aged you. You still look 70.
He does have a little eyebrow
straggler. Right? He's got some nose hairs right there.
You know what's crazy? I look at old pictures.
Use a microphone, will you?
I had them like you. And now I don't have eyebrows. I don't know what the fuck happened to him. I don't have eyebrows.
I didn't notice that.
I'm going to have one that long. It'll be this long. I go, what the hell? It's always daggy. You got to pluck it.
I never noticed. You don't have eyebrows.
I don't know.
Jeez, you look like Fire Marshal Bill. You remember him from A Living Color? Like a burn victim. Yeah. You know, let me tell you something, George.
I was lighting a barbecue one day, and it wouldn't go, so I started blowing on it.
All right. Well, we got a great program here. We've got Kansas City, they're athletes, they're coaches. We got Justin Hoover. He's a great quarterbacks coach of another great man, Skylar Thompson. He's K-State. So a lot of K-State fans, not a lot of Dolphins fans, but that's okay. Yeah. You know,
absolutely.
Your roots are KC more than anything. Let's be honest. Absolutely. You know, and of course, Hoover, you walked in and I got a little background on you. And I remember when our boy Carter Putz, you were coaching him and you were fairly new in the building this coaching business. And of course, Carter went on to break every Kansas State record as a Bishop Miege quarterback. And at the time, Drew Locke, I remember Carter was working out with Drew and they always talked about you. And who is this guy? Like, I get to meet him.
Good people, and then all of a sudden, you look smart.
You look good.
That's the kind of the business strategy.
It's brilliant. Yes, we can all do that, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So that's awesome. So, guys, thanks so much for coming today. Today, we'll talk about two things. We'll talk a little bit about golf and sort of how it's, you can't play football all the time. You got to do something for fun. And we'll certainly compare some golf and football and those sort of things. But, it's great to have a good athlete like you and a great quarterback coach like you to join us. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's talk a little bit about when you knew, obviously I'm guessing you played all the sports growing up, but talk through like your childhood as an athlete and why football became the thing it is today.
Yeah. I would say like many athletes, I grew up with a ball in my hand. Whether if it was football, baseball, basketball, any type of sport, I was always in it and having fun. And just growing up, I was always in it. I was surrounded by, my dad was a basketball coach, uncle, grandfather, everybody we're all coaches. So I just grew up around really in the gym, honestly, is kind of where I started out my sports career. And family ended up moving to Kansas City and kind of established ourselves here. And one of my promises to my dad, I'm the first person in my family, especially on my dad's side, to play football. So nobody's really familiar with the game or whatnot, but I wanted to play football. And so when we moved to Kansas City, I was like, Dad, you got to let me play football. And sure enough, he signed me up. In my first year, I was right guard and started my football career. So, and it just kind of took off from there. I got in position to start playing quarterback and just fell in love with the position in the game and the responsibilities. And you just fell in love with it. And I was, you know, having some success and realized that I could do something with it. So just kept on progressing. My dad surrounded me with great coaches and great people. And then, you know, getting connected with Coach Hoover and just finding ways to improve my game and be the best player I can be. And it's been a fun, enjoyable process. I've loved the game of football and all that. But I mean, I'm a sports guy. I like everything. And picked up on golf here recently. So
what was the recruiting process like? Obviously, you were good in high school, ended up landing at K-State. What was that like for you when you're talking with all these teams? And where did you want to go, or who was in the mix?
Yeah. My recruiting process, I would say, was a little slower than most. But, you know, for me, it was all about just getting an opportunity to go play somewhere. I wanted to go somewhere that, one, I was wanted, and two, it was a good fit for me educationally, school-wise, and football. Mm-hmm. And so when we went through the process, my dad and I mean, we drove all across the country, you know, going, visited Wake Forest, visited Oklahoma State, Iowa. I mean, we went everywhere to these one-day camps. My dad, you know, put me in a position to be seen, you know. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, like, I'm so grateful for that, because my dad put me in a position to be successful, and then I was able to go from there and make it work out. So through that process, we fell in love with K-State. You know, at the time, Coach Snyder was there, who's a legend out there, you know, and have had a lot of success, won a Big 12 championship recently in 2012. At the time, I was being recruited 2014. So that was recent at the time, and just knew it was a good fit for me. I really loved the family atmosphere, the town, the football atmosphere. I mean, it's just, they live and die football in Manhattan, Kansas. Mm-hmm. And that was always the dream of mine, is I wanted to go to a college town, get the full experience, have fun playing ball and learn and grow as a man and be prepared for life after football. And that program definitely did that for me.
How does K-State get such great players?
You know, I think a lot of it's from the leadership there. You know, at the time it was Coach Snyder and now it's Coach Kleiman, but they're guys of high integrity and they're great people. And it always starts from the top and trickles down. And so they really value high character kids in their recruitment process. And they want guys that are going to come in and buy into the program and, you know, be, you know, put the team first in everything they do. And I think that's the family, you know, what we talk about out there is treating everybody like family, doing everything for something bigger than yourself. And that's what's led K-State to having success and what made me love it so much out there. So,
Hey, just a little add on that. What are those recruiting conversations like? Is it like you see on you know, Michael Orr, and you have all the coaches popping in on the, and they're sitting at the living room table, and like, what is it really? Take us on inside that a big name coach comes out, sits on the couch, and you're sort of shitting your pants. How are you supposed to act? But they're also selling you. Yeah. Like, what's it like?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Just hearing who talk about, you know, the guys going through the recruiting process now, and just how much it's changed in just the recent years, especially with NIL. And I talk about my recruiting process, it makes me feel just super out, you know, but it was very challenging, honestly, very stressful, because it's hard to tell who's telling the truth, because everybody's telling you what you want to hear. Everybody's telling you you're the best, you know, and it's hard to kind of maneuver through and like see who's really cares and who's really telling you the truth. And for me, how I kind of picked up on that is, you know, the level of, you know, attention to detail that each coach provided to me when they communicated with me, you know, not just the amount that they did, but when they did talk to me, like, what are our conversations like, you know, are they wanting to know who I'm talking to, or are they truly like interested in getting to know me and, you know, recruiting me? And like, that's the type of stuff that I really paid attention to was, you know, what are we talking about? What is this coach, you know, how is he addressing me? What is he wanting to know? All these types of things. And when I had that, you know, approach, it really made clear to me of like, okay, who's really interested and who's not, you know, and that kind of helped me narrow down to three or four schools and, you know, ended up being K-State. So
who was in the running besides K-State? Oklahoma State, were they in the running?
Yeah, they never offered me. At the time, it was K-State, Wake Forest, Colorado, Utah, and Iowa State. Those were kind of like my top ones. I committed to K-State, I would say, pretty early before my senior year. It was like May going into my senior year. My recruiting process was kind of slow. So after I committed to K-State is kind of when some bigger schools started coming into the picture and trying to get me to flip, but I stayed put.
Were you able to just freewheel a little bit more when you were playing in the fall of your senior year after committing and just having fun out there and not worrying about if you throw a pick because you're already committed?
Absolutely. You know, that was a big reason why I wanted to commit early. Especially, I didn't want to force it, but if it was the right fit, I wanted to do before the season started because I owed that to my teammates. I wanted my team to know that this is all set in stone and I'm all in on this season. We're going to go win a state championship because, mm-hmm. At Fort Osage, my senior year, we had, want to say probably 32 seniors. And when I say like 15 of us, like played together from fourth grade on, like the relationships I had with those guys, like from the moment we started playing ball in fourth grade, we talked about winning a state championship, something mm-hmm. that Fort Osage has never done in football ever.
Right.
And sophomore, junior year, we both get to semifinals and have heartbreaking losses, you know? So it's like senior year, this is it, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, I wanted to make sure everybody knew, like I was all in and we're going to go do it. And sure enough, it worked out. We won state that year and everything worked out perfectly. So
I think if you had to do it all over again, or if he went through the process now, I think of him and I think of Drew Locke as two guys that changed the recruiting space for quarterbacks in the future in this area, because it used to kind of truly be flyover country. Mm-hmm. They'd get, you know, they'd have a layover in Kansas City and then they'd fly somewhere else to go see a quarterback, you know? And so now it's changed the way recruiting is for some of these kids coming up because of guys like Skyler. If Skyler went through the process again, he'd have 30 offers.
Huh.
It just has changed because, one, the network has gotten bigger because you are creating relationships with guys because they stop through here now. But also, I think something that helped him with his senior year of being able to have it kind of away from, I'm committed, I've got my spot, I'm happy. He also had an opportunity this summer before his senior year to go to kind of the premier quarterback camp in the country, Elite 11. And so for a kid that's being under-recruited to go with the guy committed to Bama and the guy committed to Georgia and the guy committed to Texas and go toe-to-toe with a guy and be like, okay, I can do it. Mm-hmm. I think he was a better version of himself his senior year, mm-hmm. not just because he was committed and can play carefree, but because his confidence went through the roof because he was like, oh, I'm one of these guys,
yes.
you know? And I think that was big for him. Yeah,
That's a great point because that was a turning point for me. And I would say my entire football career, because like I said, I was under recruited, didn't really like, you know, and that was always a chip on my shoulder for me. Mm-hmm. And so like when I got this opportunity to go toe to toe with these guys and, you know, like I walked away, I came home that day, like, you asked my dad, I was like, Dad, I can do this. Like I can compete with anybody. I can go all the way to and do this. And never looked back from there. Like that was a huge turning point for me. Like I can hang with the best of the best. So
yeah. I think that is part of the selling point now to college coaches, kind of talking about these guys laying the groundwork, is because now I'm like, remember when I told you about Skylar Thompson? Mm-hmm. Remember when I told you about Drew Locke? Remember when I told you about Graham Mertz or whoever it might be. And now it's like, I'm not going to call. I'm not going to tell you unless we truly believe it. And he was one of those guys that was able to kind of set the table for the next group to come through. Because after that, they're like, yeah, we wish we would add him.
Right.
Well, and we go through it on our side on the coaching of these high school golfers is you get the kid that asks you to make a call for him. And it's like, the kid isn't doing the things or the steps. And so it's really hard for you to make that call because then the coach is going to remember if it fizzles or doesn't work out or the kid, you know, quits playing golf after 2 years of college golf. And so I think it's the same It's the same process we go through.
I tell kids all the time, I'm like, if West Texas A&M is not recruiting you, I cannot call Steve Sarkisian, even if I have him in my phone book, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I can't call Texas if West Texas A&M is not recruiting you.
Correct.
You know, and so we have to be smart about the phone calls that we take, you know, or the phone calls that we make.
Right.
Because they'll stop calling at some point if you're not fair about it.
Well, and you said your dad put you in a good position, right? And it's certainly a bit about eyeballs. And the confidence that came when you're surrounding yourself with others. And this applies to everything, right? So I work with companies and we teach their salespeople how to sell. Well, if you want to be great at anything, you go hang out with the people who sell a lot of shit. Yeah. Yeah. Let's not overcomplicate this, right? Yeah, right. And then you realize, geez, they're not doing anything I can't do. And then you know, and then your attitude changes. And so certainly you're a technician as a relationship. We, even before we went on air, you know, you were talking about stepping and but there's the mental side of being a quarterback, the leadership, and there's not just one posture or attitude. There are some who are fiery, right? A Josh Allen might be a little bit different than a Patrick Mahomes or how do you work on the mental side as well as the technical side?
I think the first thing is trying to figure out, like, understand the human being before you understand the athlete. Like, I can't fix the way he drops back or the way he throws until he trusts me. So have a relationship first. So I think that's big because then, you know, and him and I now or some of these other guys, like most of the time when you're a high level guy, everybody's calling, everybody wants something. And then when things go bad, nobody's calling. Mm-hmm. And so what I always try to make sure of is you throw five picks in a game, I'm still going to be the guy that calls, right? And so I think you get to know the person first and you make that connection. And then I think after that, then it becomes just as much the physical piece is important. Obviously, you got to be able to convert on third down, so you got to be able to help them. But the reality to me is like once we figure out, you almost become a sports psychologist, you know? You almost have to go in and say, okay, Let's set some goals. Let's think about where priorities are and make sure that the priorities match up with the goals, right? And then I think everybody talks about process, right? And he has a great process. But the only reason he has a great process is because he actually executes. Like we can write it all down. We can have all these things, you know? But the reality of it is like, can you go execute the plan? Right. And that's what he's always been able to do. And so I think that's, to me, the technical piece will take care of itself if you have somebody that's willing to execute. And also, I mean, we did this yesterday. We kind of tried a couple new things, you know, never done it before with anybody. What'd you feel? You know, that's what I try to always ask them is, you know, what do you feel versus like, hey, do this, you know? And so that's really where the technique comes in is getting him to understand what it's supposed to feel like. And then, you know, that's when your muscle memory can kick in. Once you go, okay, store that one. That's the one,
right?
You know? And so I think
that's an example of what you tried yesterday.
So one of the things that he's really trying to do is kind of maintain posture throughout the play. So stay in a position to throw it, even if the play is extended from the pocket, right? Or in the pocket, but kind of has to move around a little bit. A lot of times what he'll do is kind of get stand upright and lose his base a little bit. We tried some, we tried some things where we're kind of hopping around on one leg and trying to create as much power from that back foot as we possibly can. And then we worked on some shuffle things where it's almost like, you're almost fielding a ground ball and then getting another one right after it. And basically it keeps your knees bent and your butt back and some things like that, just to really kind of exaggerate posture and exaggerate that athletic position. And then you kind of reverse engineer it from there. Then you build it around a concept on the field and a drop and a play. But you got to start with the fundamental side of it from, you know, base balance load is what we talk about a lot. You know, is your, you know, are you sturdy in the pocket? Great balance. And then obviously your ability to move in that position rather than, you know, kind of the old saying of like, you don't, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's what we're really trying to focus on. So those were a couple of the things that we kind of played with yesterday.
So the season ended. You came back to Kansas City.
Yeah.
Right? You live here in the off season.
Yes, I do.
And you work out. I'm sure the season ended. You took a little bit of time off to let your body recoup, relax a little bit. Yeah. And now you're working out. You have OTAs I still don't know what that means. Yeah. I was with
offensive.
I was with Mark Donovan and Clark Hunt the other day trying to get this damn thing passed.
Bragger.
And of course they didn't pass it. But he and I was talking to Clark and he said, "Yeah, we got OTAs coming up." And you know, I didn't want to sound like an idiot and say, "What is OTA?"
Because I hear it all the time.
But so you come back. How often will you work out here? Or where do you work out at? And
Shawnee Mission East sometimes, right?
Yeah. Are you?
Let's go watch.
You gotta let me know.
Yeah.
So I'll run some patterns.
No. Sully's like got the same height as what's his name?
Tyreek. Yeah.
Tyreek.
He's not as fast and he's as Tyreek.
He can play the Chris Jones on the defense. He's loud.
I could play defensive back. Oh, my back's going out on me again.
George is yelling at me in the pocket again.
So you work out at East once in a while?
Yeah. So we kind of just play it by trying to find a field space. I mean,
yeah.
wherever that works out and with who's, you know, background with being at East, we were at East quite a bit. We've been at Mies. I mean, you give us a line in the field, I mean, we're good to go.
Yeah. And how often do you do it?
I would say like this time of year, we try to shoot for 2 times a week,
yeah.
Three times tops, but you know, it's more so like, especially this point in my career, it's like, it's more like the quality over quantity, you know? And like every time we're together, it's like, even if it's just an hour, like for this hour, like let's really dive into it and just, even if we're just standing 10 yards apart and just doing the base fundamentals of stuff, like I'm going to focus on every little detail of that part and just try to get the most out of it. You know, because at this point in my career, it's like, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. I'm just trying to fine tune things and trying to gain an edge. And if that's, you know, like gaining 2 degrees in my, you know, flexibility and mobility, that's going to help the trajectory of the ball. You know, at this point in my career, like if we can gain an advantage in that way, like that's a win, you know? So we're just trying to find little bits and pieces through the time that we're together to
make your layups, expand. Make your free throws.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, the big stuff will come if you complete those, right. If you make all of those. And so the timing and things like that will come through organized team activities, OTAs.
There it is. Get your pen out. Hang on. Yeah,
right.
Organized.
We'll get the timing back. Get the rhythm back. Okay. But you've got to have a fundamental base set. And you got to go in there and be able to play on schedule and be able to make the easy ones first, and then the big stuff comes.
Well, it seems like those drills you were doing yesterday, and correct me if I'm wrong, are designed to buy time. When option one doesn't work, right? And if you just look at, and I don't know the numbers, but the numbers of Mahomes' success outside of that pocket, you know, I don't know if it's different than many, but my guess is there's a lot of that going on, right? The hand down, you're still living. Josh Allen does a hell of a job, but how is he still in it? Roethlisberger did it, nice, you know, so some of these guys, of course, Patrick's not a big boy. I mean, you guys probably same size. Roethlisberger and Josh Allen a little bit different, but that's probably what it is. Are you seeing more success outside of the pocket? Is that type of quarterback the only option moving forward, that you've got to be good outside the pocket to stay in the game?
I think you have to have the ability to do it. I don't think it has to be your best pitch.
Yeah.
Because the reality of it is, I mean, if you go back and you watch Patrick in the pocket, he's lights out in the pocket too. But when you have to move, or when you do get, you know, pushed out, can you still make a play? And that's when the, you know, artistry and the creativity comes into it, and the millions of reps that you have. You know, to say we're going to sit there and play catch from 15 yards away or 10 yards away or whatever, but we're going to change arm slot and we're going to move our feet in a different way. And so, again, it's kind of that reverse engineer. Like, we don't need to do 20 reps of running outside the pocket, but we need to manipulate the feet a little bit, because you're not always going to have the perfect opportunity. I think a Brady or a Rodgers or somebody like that, that, you know, Rodgers is a better athlete probably, but yeah. Brady, you're not going to, no one's going to convince you that he was a great athlete, right? But you also see at the end of the game, without having a bunch of Hall of Famers playing offensive line, like, jersey's clean. How did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because he understands space, right? So the spatial awareness is something that you're also trying to create. Like, when do you need to get out of the pocket? When can you step up in the pocket? And so some of that is just simulating you know, simulating some of that to where you learn how to do that more consistently as opposed to your automatic. And I think that's what guys right now, if you listen to any of the draft stuff right now, it's like, you know, Caleb Williams, he's so good out of the pocket. Well, he better be able to play in the pocket in the NFL.
Yeah.
Right. The guy chasing you is faster than you now.
Right.
You know, right. And it's not that way all the time in college. Mm-hmm. Right. And so now that outside linebacker runs 4.5, mm-hmm. you know, and so I think that's the difference is like, you got to know when to use it. That's what I think Patrick's so good about. Is no one to use it, but he can play from the pocket as good as anybody in the league.
What changed or why is the evolution so different from 20 years ago where it was more the Steve Youngs, even though he would get outside the pocket? But like, what, why is it different now where guys are getting outside the pocket more? Is it because of the better natural athletes on defense?
I think that's part of it. I think sometimes the defense forces your hand, right? I also think that, and I'd love to hear what you think about this, but I think from a quarterback standpoint, you also have this in football period, I think there's more of a trickle up effect than there is in other sports. So, you know, you talk, you turn on a game on Sundays and they're talking about RPO this and RPO that, like you're RPOing 15 years ago in high school football.
Mm-hmm.
And then college guys start getting in.
Right.
And then because college coaches would be dumb not to utilize what they were good at in high school. Right. And then, as younger coaches are, you know, you look at the McVays and the Shanahans and guys like that that are become McDaniel that are becoming, you know, the innovative guys in the NFL. I think they're saying instead of thinking about let's put this square peg into a round hole, like let's figure out what we can do to, you know, really showcase what these players are capable of. And I think that's has been maybe just as important as the defense and the speed changing.
Mm-hmm. I think it took longer than I would have expected. Right. We were talking a little earlier about a Chase Daniel, you know, at Mizzou. It was sling, 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 sling. And people would say with quarterbacks like this is they'll never be successful. There's no way. They're two different games. And it's interesting what you're saying is the coaches and the systems have adapted to what people are good at, as opposed to saying traditionally you've got to be a 6 foot five, you know, Matt Cassel size. No, you just need athletes. Right. Athletes who have processes and other things, but that's interesting, right? They're meeting the players where they are and getting more out of them as a result.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you draft Caleb Williams, number one, the Bears can't run the old 49ers
right.
offense, right? Like that would, you would paralyze your quarterback at that point. You better be able to create a system around him that, you know, allows him to utilize his skill set.
Yeah, totally. All right. Let's take a commercial break. We come back. Take us a little bit into the locker room of the Miami Dolphins. All right. And
here in Chiefs Kingdom,
we're here in Chiefs. Yes. Yes. I mean, come on. They're one of the best teams right now. If it wasn't minus 32 degrees, we might have been shitting our pants a little bit more. But, you know, but we knew. I want to know how your body felt sitting on that sideline.
Right? This week when they were talking about the Chiefs Stadium, and if they would have just said, put a dome on it and all this, and I'm like, ooh, be careful. Do we really want a dome? Do we want everybody coming in here during the playoffs?
Nope. Because the Dolphins are going to be coming through for many years. Hey, we're with Skylar Thompson and his coach, Justin Hoover, longtime quarterback coach, creating champions here in Kansas City. And what is the Golf Underground about?
Golf.
Creating champions. Come on back.
Guys, as the male body ages, testosterone levels steadily decline, and your body's become increasingly unable to produce healthy levels of the primary male hormone, testosterone. At Regain Functional Medicine, we can help you regain your quality of life with testosterone replacement therapy. TRT improves brain function, sleep cycles, heart health, performance, and overall body composition so you can feel better, function better, move better, and look better. Visit us today at ifeelmuchbetter.com. Regain Functional Medicine, with locations in Lawrence and Leawood. Regain is better.
Hey, Brian Sullivan here, and I've got a tip for you. You've got to head to Unforked. It's an amazing restaurant. What I like about these guys is they promise to buy and support seasonal, local ingredients first. And I love the fact that they source from smaller, family, GAP-certified or organic farms, prime-going regions, artisan producers. All I'm getting at is, if you like fresh stuff, Unforked is the place to be. And like they say it, fork or no fork, you can be sure you're getting the highest quality, socially responsible ingredients possible. And not to mention, it's delicious. So whether you're out south or downtown, stop by Unforked for a delicious and healthy meal. Sheridan's Unforked. Honest, clean food.
Cowell Insurance Services is your leading program administrator for workers' compensation. They're dedicated to meeting the unique challenges of the insurance industry and assisting employers in reducing their costs. CIS has provided insurance claim and loss control services to various industries, including trucking, construction, retail convenience stores, and healthcare, as well as public entities for over 30 years. They work with both retail agents and industry clients, or a combination of the two. If you're tired of fighting the rising costs of premiums and claims, give Cowell Insurance Services a call. Their dedicated staff is ready to find you the best insurance option at the most competitive price. They can help to define or enhance your safety program in order to move you in the right direction in reducing your claim and premium costs. Contact Cowell Insurance Services today, 816-214-4070.
Hey, welcome back, Golf Underground. We got George back from Arizona, Wardo. Golf season, and George is excited right now because we're with Skylar Totson.
I played quarterback in high school. Half the season, my senior year, I threw a bunch of interceptions. halfway through the year, he said, okay, you're the slot back now. Frank, you're the quarterback. So I took my demotion very good. But we used to call plays. We had different formations, and every back had a number. So a typical play would be, let's say, a 222 dive. That was the play. Nowadays, you know, you hear Mahomes and Andy Reid and all these guys, corndog left, Taylor Swift right, and you know, sand wedge, lob wedge over the flag. What the hell does that mean? Go ahead and give me a play. Yeah. A Miami Dolphin play.
Yeah. So it would be gun, north right clamp, south, fox, H top, pass 38 top, Gumby, XP sweat.
How do you say all that in the huddle when
the crowd's going crazy?
It's 0 degrees and you've got people yelling.
Yeah. Well, it goes into the preparation aspect. You know, like kind of my process as we go through the week and the plan is in, like I always try to highlight the more wordy plays. Or for whatever reason, if a word or a play doesn't resonate that I'm having trouble remembering or whatever the case, I'll highlight and just honestly, I study that to where I memorize it.
Okay, like, so what was the first word?
So we say gun, tell us we're in the gun, and then north-right clamp.
North-right clamp. What's north-right clamp?
Formation.
Okay. So what's that mean? And then what?
So north-right clamp, south. South is telling our H where he's lining up in the formation, so it's an empty formation. So north-right clamp, south, it's all formation. Fox is telling our F he's motioning. And then H top is telling our H he's going to do a top motion around the backside of us, and we're catching the snap. Pass 38 top Gumby is protection. Tells O lineman what the protection, what the action is, and then XP sweat is the concept.
So
what's Gumby?
That's a question for the O line guy.
So those guys just have to listen to their part. Because I often wonder where you see the guys kind of pop in the huddle just a little bit. I'm like, how did – there's no way they heard all it. So they're just picking up on that?
Yes. And, like, that's what, like – it's a wordy – we're in one of the more wordy systems in the Shanahan systems. But, like, to that extent, like, when you're just – if you're O-line, you're just listening for 38 Gumby.
They know what they're doing. Okay.
You know, and then, like, if you're a receiver, you're listening to the formation. And then oftentimes we're going to tag who is running what, you know. So – you know, like oftentimes you're going to be told what you're going to do, especially if you're the primary or secondary guy. So, you're really just listening for your segment. And then that tells you, you know, each guy.
You're the only guy who has to know all
except
of it.
Except for the quarterback. Exactly. Yeah.
What position is it, running back, that probably knows the second most?
In our system, tight end.
Tight end.
Yeah. Cause we're a lot, we do a lot of like 21 personnel, 12 personnel, like, we're a little bit more heavier personnel team, and we ask our tight ends to do fullback work. They get out in route, they pass block, they do everything. Like, our tight ends have to know a lot in our system.
So at the break, you were talking about a play from when you started the Buffalo Bills. Talk through what you were going to tell us.
Yeah, so that's what the play I was talking about, just like that's kind of – there was multiple instances going into that game where I knew is the crowd noise is going to be the an issue, and you know, hearing a play through the headset, that's one thing I try to explain to people. Like, if you can imagine, like us sitting here on a walkie-talkie in separate rooms, you know how it's kind of fuzzy a little bit, you know, and imagine 80,000 fans telling you suck, you know, while you're trying to listen to it.
Yeah.
So I would always try to just memorize the more challenging, more wordier plays to where when McDaniel would say the first couple words, like, oh, I know this play. I don't, you know, I can, it just helps the operation aspect, which
I think it's like being married. The play caller and the quarterback have to be married. They got to be able to finish each other's sentences, right? Because it's going to go out. The microphone's going to, the speaker's going to go out, and he may stumble in his play call or change it and decide that he wants to call a different play, and then he gets the first four words out, and the quarterback better be able to finish the sentence and put him in the right play.
And they cut it off at 20 or 15?
15.
15? Yeah. And so I thought, that's why Mahomes is always doing that, because he's
Yeah. And I thought, like, my transition to the NFL, that was the most challenging part, was hearing the play, processing 17 to 20 words, spitting it out, conceptually understanding everything, then going and executing the play in a timely fashion, you know, because you're on a play clock. So that's still something I'm still trying, like, always searching for ways to how can we make that more efficient. And that's something that I'm still to this day, like, focusing on and working on.
What was a typical play in college?
Be like, ride out, gun ride out, 60 combo, all dimes.
Okay. Well, what's a typical play in high school?
Trips left, three jet, lock.
See, I can do that.
You're the
jet. Yeah.
You know, I think of, like, so I remember Matt Castle.
Victory formation.
I think Matt Castle told a story once about when he was here, and it was with Todd Haley. Mm. Todd Haley had come from Arizona. Matt had come from New England. And so playbooks kind of are the same throughout the league, potentially, but the verbiage is going to be different. So it might be the same concept with a different language, right? And he said that Todd Haley would get flustered, and I know we're all shocked by that. He'd get flustered when he's calling a play, and he would revert back and call it an Arizona turn.
Oh, boy.
And so Matt would revert back to New England to be able to translate. So think, like, Spanish to German to English to the huddle. Yeah. All to get, you know, to avoid a delay of game. And I think that's incredible to think of, like, you're not only trying to master what's right in front of your face, but you got to be able to recall. And then you also have to be able to sometimes to interpret what's being said or what they're asking for.
Well, yeah, he had to sometimes, well, he was not allowed to overrule a play. If Todd said it in that gibberish, you're running that damn play, despite that the defense is lined up. You're not going to win this play. Yeah. So he didn't have that flexibility. And I suppose that's always a balance, right? How much you stay in script, right? You got the sheet music in front of you, but you need to play jazz a little bit too, right? And some coaches are better than others at allowing that, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's got to be, I would assume Coach McDaniel's that way. I've got to think that, you know, that Andy is as good as anybody in the league at it, because it's like, I just want to score touchdowns. I don't really care who calls the play. Right. Put us in a better situation. Mm-hmm. If you're out there and see something that you think is going to work better, you just better have a good answer for it of why you got out of that play. That would be, you know, as a coach, that's kind of what you want is give me the answer for why you went to that.
All right. Let's talk about Miami.
Okay.
South Beach. All right, welcome to Miami. Did you feel like you were going to be pimping that shit down there? Like, right, I'm going to
engage now. Right? No more pimping.
And did you have to leave Kansas City because too many people were buying beers for you under the assumption it was Travis Kelce that they were doing? But I mean, because you know, you kind of look like his stunt double a little bit.
The amount of times I've heard that. Oh my gosh. I'll tell you what, it was very intimidating at first. Just, it was a big change, you know, like going to K-State, I'm 2 hours away from home. I've always been a Midwest kid. I've always grown up on land, had space, loved to go fishing. You know, you go down to Florida, South Beach, it's a little different, you know? But I think for me personally, it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because it was the first time I was on my own, you know? I didn't have, you know, mom or dad to, you know, if I was going through a tough time, could drive out and have lunch, you know, it was like, I had to grow up, you know, and figure some things out. And that was that part, that transition to a new chapter of life was really cool for me. And just being able to establish myself down there, make some friends on the team, you know, all that stuff. I've enjoyed it. I mean, and it's 90 degrees and sunny every day.
Oh, so
I mean, you spend some time down there and get to experience that, and you come back here, it's
Okay, let me ask you a question, Sully. You're living in Manhattan. You want to go fishing.
Yeah.
You go to your friend's farm pond and you catch a 4-pound bass.
Well, I mean.
Or you go to Miami. You get on a yacht. You go out in the intercoastal, or you go out in the Atlantic Ocean and you catch a marlin. What sounds more intriguing to you?
I'm welcome to Miami.
Sign me up for the Miami.
I mean, just think of the difference. Yeah. Just think of the difference. You drive your pickup truck through some guy's fence. You have to open the gate, close it, go down a dirt road, get out your little tackle box, hope the fish are biting, or you go down and you're in your SUV, Escalade or whatever. You pull up to the marina. Hey, what slip is the yacht in that we're going fishing in today? You know, yeah, hey, let's good. Turn yeah. on some mm-hmm. tunes. Hey, what do you got for food?
Yeah, what's you the know? Where's the
Come where's on, the let's be realistic.
I mean, that's it. That's
God, you hit a grand slam in the bottom of the ninth, seventh game of the World Series. Yeah. Going to Miami. I know. Holy cow.
So speaking of Miami,
you went to Cleveland.
You ever have any nights out or any fun with good old Tyreek?
No.
Rolling with different folks.
Yeah, well, you know, I would say like everybody on their team, on our team, one thing that I really pride ourselves like with our organization and our culture, like in our locker room, like when we're at work, like we have an unbelievable culture at Miami and everybody is in it for one another. No matter if you're Tyreek Hill or, you know, you're undrafted rookie coming in, like everybody gets treated the same, which is awesome. But definitely outside of the locker room, everybody kind of has their own life. And I think that was what was interesting for me, like transitioning to this level of ball, is like you have guys that are 36 years old, married and have 4 kids, you know, and then you have guys that are, you know, coming in here at 22 years old, single. And, you know, like you just in the locker room, you have everything, mm-hmm. you know? But yeah, no, I haven't hung out with Tyreek.
What do people not know about just what happens within not only a locker room, just the team? Like what's it like being an NFL football quarterback? Mm-hmm. Like what, like stuff you didn't know even going to K-State, like, wow, anything like what is it?
Yeah. Well, I would just say, you know, when you're, you know, we're basically the head coach on the field in our position as the quarterback, you know, and through in college and whatnot, like you experience that and find that. But then once when you get to the NFL and you're with an organization, a firm that's paying you to do your job, to do this, and like, I would just say like you, the level of responsibilities are just even higher. But like, that's what makes me love playing quarterback. You know, like mm-hmm. I love leading people. I love creating relationships with the lunch ladies, the janitors, mm-hmm. everybody in the facility, you know, that's part of the job, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, that's what I would say that the outside world, you don't obviously get to see. I mean, you have hard knocks, you have stuff that kind of give you an insight mm-hmm. a little bit, but it's not, they don't show you everything, mm-hmm. you know, but like, I would just say and once again, just talking about our culture, like McDaniel has created a great culture of everybody's comfortable in their own skin and coming to work. And we're all in this together, you know, which makes it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah.
Like you walk into our quarterback room, I'll tell you what, we're watching film and we're listening to Kenny Chesney, or like we have a little break. Like we're talking life, like we're humans, you know, on top of work. And that's what I've loved about being in Miami. It doesn't feel, I'm going to work every day and this is fun, you know, like this doesn't feel like work. So that's a credit to our organization and what we've created there in Miami as well.
Well, keep playing well, because after the NFL, like the real world, you know, like, you know, jobs, it sucks ass. I mean, you milk this cow 15 just more years. Rolling. You just keep going. And we were talking about the 4 amputees at the Dolphins Chiefs. So there was actually 4 fans. What was it like on that cold day, the playoff day? Like, I didn't want to go. I had
Talk
tickets.
About
I
when said, you got off the plane. What you told yeah,
like, what was that like?
Yeah. So obviously, everybody on the team knows I was from Kansas City. So, you know, like the whole build up the whole week is we're hearing how cold it's going to be. You know, so everybody's coming to me like, hey, how cold is it actually going to be? And I'm like, guys, like I've experienced cold, but it's saying it's going to be negative 30. I don't know what it's going to feel like. I can't tell you. So we're going, we're walking, we're going to the team plane that day. And we got on the plane in Miami and it is 95 degrees. And it is a perfect sunny day, like humid, just how you would imagine a day. And
the boys coming in shorts, Birkenstocks and a
And t-shirt. I was one of those guys, honestly. I didn't pack any of my warm clothes. And I'm like, I'm moving down to Florida. I don't need to pack my coat or anything, you know? So I'm one of those guys that gets on there in a sweatshirt and sweatpants. And like, everybody's looking at me like, dude, you're nuts. So we get to Kansas City, we land and, you know, so we're like in the middle of the whatever ramp at the airport, the tarmac. And so when we're walking out the door, like we're walking on these stairs. So when you're at walking right out this door, I mean, you are like high exposed. Up, flat. So like you hit it and it was like gust of wind, just whoom, felt like you just got smacked in the face. And it was cold. And like, as soon as we get on the bus, there was like multiple guys like, dude, why do you live here? Like, wow, this is miserable. Like everyone. And I was like, just trying to explain to guys, like, it's not like this all the time, but I will say like, it goes back to the mental piece. You know, it's a thing that like, you realize like, yeah, this is a reality, but like, you can't let your mind drift and let it affect, you know, your approach to everything, you know, and just try to shut it out. But it was very, very,
how do these guys, like Tyreek came up, with no sleeves, and how do you physically do it? It's like sitting in an ice bath for 3 hours.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, like there was multiple times where guys were coming to the sideline, like especially after long possessions, like, dude, I can't feel a thing out there. Like one of our linebackers, David Long, like I just overheard him, like when he came off after the Chiefs had a long drive and scored, and he was like, dude, like halfway through it, like I'm out here tackling, like Pacheco, I don't feel a thing, like my whole body's numb. Like
it's insane.
It's just like when you like hear that, you know, it's just like this doesn't sound okay, you know. But it was a fun. I mean, it was a true football game. And for me coming back to Kansas City is my first time being back home. My family was able to be there, and I wish it was a little bit better circumstances for them to enjoy the game a little bit weather wise. But
yeah,
it was a really really special day. All things considering,
and that's good. You got to be proud too to see. See some of your guys, you know, like Drew was maybe one of your first big boys, right? Now you got Skyler. You probably sit there like on pins and needles, like,
well, that Sunday or Monday night game when he got in and lit it. And that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like it's almost now, I mean, you've had relationships for so long with these guys that it becomes like probably a proud dad moment.
Yeah,
kind of like, of course. You don't even think of it. As anything else, like kind of going back to the beginning of talking about kind of understanding the person, like I care way more about him as a person than I do a player, but to see success and, you know, I remember his first start was against the Jets in New York and I was still the head coach at East at the time. And we played on a Thursday night, which meant Sunday was our Monday practice. So I couldn't be there. And so I'm literally having my wife and kids text me score updates while we're out on the practice field, you know, because I was just, you know, obviously wanted to be there and would have under other different circumstances. But yeah, I mean, you root for him for, you know, you hope that he gets to do this till he's, you know, 35 years old, you know, and he can play as long as he possibly can.
And then play golf.
Yeah. And then play a lot of golf.
You want to do this? Why don't we take just a quick commercial break? When we come back, we're going to wrap up a couple questions. We're going to do Wardo's famous E9.
Rapid fire?
We'll go rapid fire. And
talk some golf.
And
we're going to talk some golf.
We're
going to
talk
George.
A little golf. That'll be our lead in, right? Okay. And we don't want to excite him that much. You know, we make champions here on the Golf Underground, right? I mean, listen, Darius Rucker was nothing until he came onto this program.
Same with Jim Rohn.
Right? It was nothing.
Same with Woodland. Right. Same, you name it.
But speaking of Castle, when we can't get a guest, we just call Matt and he'll join. He's like, all right, Sully, I was there. Dude. All right, you're on the Golf Underground. Skylar Thompson, Miami Dolphins. We got Coach Hoover. All he does is make champions. See you on the other side.
What's up, Underground? Sully here with a message from our friends over at Bob's Site. Now, buying a new vehicle can be a bit like buying a new set of clubs, which means when you want to drive the ball straight, you seek advice from experts, golf pros, like our boy Wardo. And when it comes to buying your next car or truck, you also need expert advice so that you drive away in style. Well, you now have options with the Site family's expanded dealership, now including Honda and Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram in Lawrence, Kansas. And they're there to guide you to the perfect vehicle. With a commitment to exceptional service and a real passion for helping each customer, they're like the trusted golf pros of the auto world. And they're ready to analyze your needs and match you with your ideal ride. So step into bobsite.com or visit their Lawrence locations. Experience the difference of a team that's dedicated to helping you navigate your options, ensuring you drive off with confidence and satisfaction.
Hey, welcome back. Golf Underground, back in the stable. And Bordo, we finally got to golf because this is the Golf Underground. This isn't the Football Underground.
Well, it's just very intriguing. I like to talk about other things than golf sometimes, you know? We have people in the football profession. I think it's very fitting.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you.
All right, so let's talk about it. I've worked with you twice now on your game, Skyler. Obviously, who have you come in and worked with? Charlie. You're getting better, improving, hitting it square in the blade. Talk through your love for golf and what got you into it.
Yeah. So it was last year, my first off season after my rookie year, first time I've ever had any free time, like any type of experience where didn't have class. I didn't have like, and everybody's telling me like to not touch a football, like take time to yourself and chill out. Mm-hmm. And I was doing that. And like, I was going crazy. I was just like, I have to find something that somewhat resembles football in a way of a competitive hobby for me to do. It's not super serious, but like I kind of feel that competitiveness a little bit. And I had a couple of teammates like, hey, you should get some clubs and just pick up and kind of see if you like it. And so I did that. And I mean, I just quickly realized one, just like how much the game golf, like, carries over to my position of like, we always talk about one play at a time, one throw at a time. Mm-hmm. You have a bad throw, you got to be able to flush it and get ready for the next play. Mm-hmm. Like I quickly realized with golf, I mean, a lot of bad swings there at first, but, you know, like that's something that me personally with football, I struggle with sometimes is letting go of a bad play. Mm-hmm. And like, as I was playing, like, dang, like there's a lot of stuff that correlates over to my position that like I'm kind of getting reps at here, you know, and I'm enjoying this and like I'm disconnected from the world. Like when I'm out there playing, not on my phone. I'm with good company most of the time with my friends or teammates or coaches or, you know, whoever, like all the commodities that have came with the game, I've just fell in love with and have really enjoyed playing in. So,
yeah, I think it's just been fun to watch you grow up with your technique, and obviously we've worked a couple times, but what is your biggest hurdle? Well, we're getting to it. What's your biggest hurdle? What's been your biggest hurdle with the technique the swing of the game?
Yeah, I think one, you pick up a club and like, oh, I'm an athlete, I can do it. Mm-hmm. I can, you know, just like most of the time, my whole life, like I've been able to pick up a basketball and be pretty good at it or whatever. And so like you kind of have that mindset going into it, and then you quickly realize there's a ton of technique that goes into it, and you can't just pick up a, you know, I played baseball, you know, I know how to swing. I can just, you know, figure it out. Well, like you quickly realize there's a lot that goes into it. And I think that's what's been really fun for me, like working with you and seeing how like I swing left-handed, which is very odd because mm-hmm. I'm a right-handed thrower. So I kind of have some different, you know, I'm a rotational athlete, but when I swing a club, I'm rotating differently opposite than what I do for a living, you know? Mm-hmm. So, it's a little different, but it's been what I've enjoyed the most is like what we were kind of talking about before we started here was just you explaining, you know, a correction of like feeling something, you know, or the rotation here or more extension through the swing. Mm-hmm. Like there's so
pushing
much
pushing off
that,
the
like,
trail foot.
Yeah. It's like so much like, dang, like this is stuff that hoof says, you know, to me when I'm throwing, you know, it's like, that's been what's been really cool. Like as I've gotten into it more with you and learning more about the game.
And one thing that's cool to hear from your side is the way in which you guys train, whether it's in season or off season, is like, you're not doing as much barbell and heavy lifting. And, you know, it's more about pliability, movement, mobility, lateral bend, side bend, all those different things, which, you know, I think we, as the viewer of NFL, we just think NFL big plates and moving a lot of weight around and unilateral positions where it's so much about rotation or your body's in a compromised position. You got to make a throw sidearm. And so I think that that's pretty cool to know that these golfers aren't really training that differently than an NFL quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
obviously it could be different for alignment or whatnot.
And I think it's like the physical part of it for sure is very similar in the movements. There's no doubt about it, I think. But I think that there's other things that really make the quarterback love golf too. And I always think of it like in between plays, right? For a quarterback, you know, you have the play clock clicks on, and for a golfer, you walk to your ball, you know, and you have time to get ready for the next play or the next throw or the next swing. And so I think that there's a lot of things that match up that are really cool. And it's not surprising that you get addicted to golf, just like you, you know, and the technical side of it and the feels of it, as you would as a player.
Who are some of the other players that playing or got into golf down there?
Our quarterback room plays a lot. Me, Tua, Mike, our kicker, Jason Sanders. That's kind of like our group that I played with quite a bit down there. And they're all pretty good.
Solid. So you're trying to catch him is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. No, I was definitely the weak link last year. And I, you know.
You're narrowing the gap?
I'm trying. I was like, this is one of those things, you know, like I want to be good. Like I'm going to do something. I'm going to be good at it.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of had a little bit of a natural swing, but it was like, you know, I just never knew where the ball was going sometimes.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, they've heckled me a little bit this offseason, asked if I've been working on a little bit. So I'm sure we're going to figure out during OTA's offseason. Organized team activities. Yeah.
So what was your gift? You got a gift from Tua in the quarterback room. What was your gift?
Yeah, he got us all the quarterback room a golf simulator. So
Wow.
I mean, talk about great teammate. Yeah. I mean,
so where's that simulator at now?
I got to find some space for it.
Yeah. Kevin needs a new one. Why don't you? I'll tell you what, you put it down here, you get free lessons.
Yeah. We got no room, George.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can he hit it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, he's a good player. So, I think, like, as we're all, you know, talking about, like, it's cool for us, like I said, our quarterback room plays quite a bit and goes out there and stuff, and just our conversations about, you know, football, talking about, you know, just you just get to know each other and create relationships that are bigger than football. And I think, like, that's what's, you know, really special about our quarterback room that we had last year is we spent a lot of time outside of football together. We played golf. We, you know, all that stuff. So, you know, it was really cool for when Tua did that for us. You know, it was a really cool gift because it's like I would never buy that for myself, just being honest.
Yeah.
I think if you, like, when an athlete retires, George, you would probably attest to this. Like, one of the things that you miss the most, like, of course you miss game day and you miss the locker room.
Yeah.
And golf provides interchangeable locker room for you, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're paired up with this random guy, but you get to know him and, you know, and so for 4 hours or whatever it is, you have this new locker room of camaraderie and, and friendship that you're making. And I think that that's a really natural thing for athletes after they finish playing that they want to have.
Yeah. I think everyone requires it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody requires and that's what's so good about the game, like,
well,
to your
it's
point.
It's amazing. You meet people and they're friends for the rest of your life, and you meet them on the golf course.
What's the quote, George?
Huh?
What's the quote?
I played golf with Ian Scholes in Australia at Royal Melbourne Golf Course. My son was living over there, and I met him at noon. We teed off at 1. We had a little lunch. We get through at 4. Next thing you know, me and my son drive, jump in the car, takes us back to where we're staying. And I called Ian and I said, hey, we were strangers at noon and friends for life at 5. And that's what golf does.
Yeah, it really does.
You know, you'll be amazed at how many people you meet that you've never played golf with before. And all of a sudden you'll play golf with them. You'll play golf with them again. And they become your best friends.
Yeah.
I never knew this knucklehead until I played golf with him. And I married him. I married him.
He screwed up more in the marriage than he does on the golf
course. I did. I don't know who's marrying you, but I'm free.
Hey, I was your first heterosexual marriage.
Yeah, yeah. My first one was a gay couple, and I've done 3 since then, and I got one in the books. He was supposed to get married, Darren Blake, during COVID, and I think he told his wife, his lovely girlfriend, Alexa, he said, honey, I don't know when we're going to get married. Why don't you pick the date, and I'll pick the year? Because they're still not married, and I was supposed to marry him at Silverleaf Country Club during COVID. And they're still not married.
Well, he it was because George's final comment, you know, Wardo's officially married now because George, you know, he ordained him or whatever. And he said, by the powers invested in me by get ordained as a minister.
Lifeministry.com.
Lifeministry.com. I now pronounce you man and wife. I'm like, is it official? Really? Is it official?
So we're literally in this back room. It's like literally half the size of this, getting ready to go out. And George and somebody like brings this tequila back. And George and I are the only ones in there. And he goes, all right, let's take it. So we take this shot and he goes, let's go get him, partner. Like it was a game. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Let's go get him.
Yeah. Well, and we did a show that morning with Woodland and all the guys. And George was more nervous about that event than he said than playing in Yankee Stadium. And it's, that's the other thing about golf, right?
Yeah.
And you've said this forever. You're more nervous over a club championship 5-foot putt than you were in Yankee Stadium because that's your spot. You're used to being a quarterback. You've been drilled, practiced, and rehearsed.
You're in your element. Right? Yes. You're in your element. You know, and I'll tell you a funny story.
Yeah.
Freddie Couples was the number one player in the world, 1992. And we're playing against the Chicago White Sox, and he's playing in a tournament there. And I played a lot of golf with Fred growing up, or when I lived out in California. And they did a little promotion before the game to promote the PGA Tour playing in Chicago. So they had put a flag out by center field, and these guys were behind home plate. And it was Fred and somebody else. They got a player from the White Sox and a player from the Royals to go out there and hit a shot. Now, obviously, he doesn't have his clubs or whatever, but, you know, you put any club in somebody's hand, they're going to – if you're – the best player in the world. Fred came in last. And we went out that night afterwards, and I said, Fred, what the hell happened? He said, I've never been so nervous in all my life. Mm-hmm. You know, there's guys walking around. It's 5 minutes before the game starts, and guys are going, get your beer here, popcorn, hot dogs. You know, everybody's screaming. He's like used to playing. Over. Yeah, he's used to playing in very serene circumstances. Nobody's saying a word. Not a three-deck stadium all the way around, you know. And he was just out of his element.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm out of my element when they put up yellow ropes on a golf course, I can't play a lick. I can't play. But you get me over at Mission Hills, shoot, I beat Harry's ass every time we play, and he plays on the Corn Ferry.
That's Charlie.
Charlie. No, I beat Harry. I can't beat Charlie. I beat Harry.
All right, you want to do a little rapid fire?
Let's do it.
All right. Your favorite golf course in the world that you've played so far?
That I've played? Grand Oaks.
Okay. The golf course you want to get on, you've never played?
I got to say Pebble Beach, right?
Yeah, Pebble or Augusta, I'd say. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Pebble would be cool. Just, I think the water, like, I don't know. I think that would be...
The scene?
Yeah, just not the wind, but...
All right, the most famous person in your phone. We asked George this earlier. Other than George Brett.
Tyreek.
Peyton Manning, maybe.
Nice.
Peyton Manning.
The most nervous you've ever been on the football field.
Most nervous. Whew. You know, I would say, wow, never been asked that before. Most nervous.
You're like Barbara Walters right
now. I would say probably like when I say nerves, I like to say like butterflies, mm-hmm. like that butterfly feeling in your stomach.
Yep.
And that playoff game versus Buffalo when, you know, it was a big moment for me. You know, I was, you know, a seventh round draft pick, you know, and kind of in a position here, I'm starting a wild card game, you know?
Yeah.
And it was like, for me, this is a dream come true. I've worked 20 years for my life for this, you know? Mm-hmm. And, but you're so caught up in the preparation and everything. So like, I didn't really ever have time to even realize what was going on. Mm-hmm. And like, I just vividly remember taking the field for that first possession and seeing like the 4K camera, you know, you see those high quality cameras are following the quarterback. Mm-hmm. And like, I kind of just like see it and I'm like stepping in the huddle. I'm like,
here we go.
You know? How did you do that then?
No, I played well. I could have played better. Had a chance to win that day. But it was
what was the final score?
30. We lost by 2 points. We lost by three points.
So 30,
34, 31, I think.
Wow. So you led them to 31 points.
Yeah.
I will say Joel Damon.
Well, we had our defense played phenomenal. We had some big time turnovers.
Play good, giving up 34 points.
Josh Allen.
Bad offense that day.
Well, and I had a couple of turnovers that stumped us a little bit, but it was like I told every all coaches in Miami, everybody knows this. Like second play of the game. I'm under center running a play action pass, throw it to Jalen Waddle. We don't complete it. I will never forget. I remember going up under center and like I couldn't feel a thing in my body. Mm-hmm. Like the throw, I couldn't tell you if it went 70 yards or if it went 10. Like it was like I couldn't feel it. Like it was the most like unreal feeling I've ever experienced.
What happened? Why?
I think it's just the moment and everything, and just like
was the play after Waddle dropped it. Yeah.
Like it got deflected a little bit, but like it was second play of the game. So like you're trying to get into a rhythm a little bit, trying to find it. But it was pretty crazy.
I'm sure everyone's had it. I'm sure everybody's had that moment.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
All right. I got two more for you. Your favorite pre-round meal.
Pre-round meal.
Pre-game meal, not pre-round.
Is this in football or golf?
Football.
Pre-game meal. I'm not a superstitious guy. Kind of
just go with whatever.
I see whatever looks good, I'm going to eat it. But like I love sweets. So like it's kind of a game day thing for me. Like whether if it's like Sour Patch Kids or like Skittles, something like that.
Snort some Pop-Tarts, Pop-Tarts.
That's kind of always like, I don't know, for whatever reason, that's kind of always been kind of a thing that I do. I always have something like that on me a little bit. So,
all right, you're playing Pebble Beach, your favorite golf course that you've never played. George is caddying. Who's your dream foursome?
Ooh. All right, Michael Jordan. So it's me and George and two others.
No, George is caddying.
So I got three guys.
Yeah. Because we knew you wouldn't pick George, so we thought we'd get him in the group somehow. Yeah.
I'm going. I'm going Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, and John Daly.
Sweet.
Wow. How much you playing for?
If you're playing with,
like to play for a lot of money. What are you going to play him for?
If you're playing with MJ,
George's money, not yours.
Yeah.
Sponsored by.
He's got a lot of it.
Hey, you want to play with us? We play $5,000 automatic two downs. What are you going to say?
I don't know, guys.
Jordan.
Thank you for letting me.
Jordan plays every guy in his group for $1,000 a hole, I believe. So there's your stakes.
I'm not there yet.
Nah.
$10. We'll get you there.
$10 Nassau. You'll get him there.
All right, I got to go teach.
Yeah, before we go,
can I ask one more question?
One last question.
So, what do you have an established handicap yet?
So I will say no. But I played, so this off season, I played for the first time, I played my ball the whole way. Because I always played scrambles, kind of, so I was like, I couldn't really tell if I was getting better or not, you know, through that. So I was like, you know, I'm going to go play my ball the whole time. And first time I shot a 91.
Okay.
So.
Nice.
Yep. So I shot a 91.
That's doable.
So.
Mm-hmm. Hey, well, listen, George,
somewhere to start.
We're playing on Saturday.
We are playing Saturday. We haven't played forever.
Forever.
That wasn't a scramble that day.
Yeah, it was. It was a two-man scramble.
Two-man scramble.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we got a big match Saturday.
Big match Saturday.
And then heading to the ball game. Do you ever go to Royal Games when you're in town?
Yeah.
You want
to
go?
Yeah, I try to. I'm out of town this weekend.
I mean, they play 81 home games.
Yeah.
If you're not at OTAs, you're always welcome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Love saving.
OTAs.
Right. Yeah. Hey, maybe you can get him to throw out the first pitch in some game. You know? I mean, he's pretty famous now.
You know what? Kansas State night. They always have Kansas State night, KU night. I think it'd be awesome.
I threw a first pitch for K-State night my senior
year. Did you? Perfect.
Did not throw a strike.
Yeah.
At Royals?
Yep.
Oh, I got a video. When this show's over, I'm going to show you a video. Pull up Don Baylor catching the first pitch. That's all you got to do on YouTube and watch it. It'll blow your freaking mind. What happens?
Jeez, I'm excited now.
Yeah. I'm going to show you this.
We'll wrap it up. Skyler, have a great season. Absolutely. Right, man? Yeah. We got some time here to work on the golf game, but we always root for the hometown guys.
Always.
Right? Like you said, Coach, the human's more important than even the team, and, you know, as Kansas City fans. So we'll be pulling for you, bro.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah,
Coach, you just keep making those champions.
Yeah, right? That's the goal. That's the goal.
I mean, if we're going to remain like the entertainment / sports capital of the world here in Kansas City, which we are now, you're a big cog in that wheel.
I'm ready. Keep getting me guys like this. It'd be easy.
All right. And maybe we'll all go out and golf.
I'd love to.
They allow fivesomes out there. So maybe we all head out there. All right. So hope you had a great time on the Golf Underground. Don't become a Miami Dolphins fan, but please become a Skylar Thompson fan. Follow him on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, all that shit. Coach Hoover, he's too old for that. All he does is he's out making champions. So we'll see you next time from the Underground.